Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we will stop in LA to speak with William Updike of Locked On Clippers about Blake Griffin's return to the Staples Center this coming season and how the schedule shakes out for the Clippers. We'll go to Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs about the much-anticipated return of LeBron James to Cleveland. And lastly, we'll speak with David Rommel of Locked On Heats about Dwayne Wade's recent comments on his future. It's all coming up, the biggest stories, the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi guys, we're back for another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, and I am the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com. Lots to talk about. The NBA schedule has been released, so we'll look at that from a couple of teams' perspectives, including the return of former stars to those teams and what we may expect to see from those particular fan bases and organizations, and also talk about some interesting information coming from Dwayne Wade. So let's get to it. Let's bring in one of the hosts of the Locked On Clippers podcast. We had him on last week actually speaking about a few other things, but now that the NBA schedule has been released, William Updike from Locked On Clippers is here to speak about the Los Angeles Clippers NBA schedule. William, an interesting schedule for the Clippers, a team that obviously missed the playoffs last season but is looking to make that push back into the top eight season in the Western Conference. But the way that the season starts, it's a pretty tough going for a team looking to integrate a lot of pieces that missed some time last year.
Yeah, Josh, thanks for having me on. The schedule is bookended by some really hard stretches of games, starting with the first 14. They're particularly difficult, all but one against teams that made the playoffs. And we play OKC twice and Houston twice. And it's kind of one of those situations where you don't want to start out the beginning of the season in too much of a deficit, because while 14 games certainly isn't, you know, the death of a season, it is about 17% of the total season. So, you know, a lot of people see us going like 4-10 in that stretch, which would be a lot less than ideal.
Yeah, look, it is tough, and especially because we talk about these guys. Like last week, we spoke about Danilo Gallinari barely playing last season. Avery Bradley, who played, I think, 6 games as a member of the Clippers. Patrick Beverley, who played maybe 10 games last season with that knee injury, trying to reincorporate those. You know, how guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander going to fit into that mix? A full season with Tobias Harris, a new starting center with the Polish Hammer, Marcin Gortat there now instead of DeAndre Jordan. So trying to get continuity happening while playing a whole bunch of really excellent teams. And of course, you're going to get that all through the Western Conference, but the way that this schedule is loaded is going to make it tough to get off to that start. And then, yeah, some teams do find it hard to recover from poor starts as your morale starts to dip in the team, and of course that can have a big impact. So it is a pretty rough stretch to begin this season. Now, say they do start out going 4-10, what do you think that does for the team in terms of mindset? Do they become not necessarily less competitive, but do they maybe adjust their goals if the season starts off in a rocky way? Or is that something that you think Doc will have had, I guess, have that thought process that let's get through here, depending on what we do, then we can make a charge through the middle portion of the season?
Yeah, I'm hoping actually that stretch will kind of define what Doc ends up doing and adjusts his expectations likewise. If we're having a particularly difficult stretch, I would really like to see maybe some of the vets get a little bit more rest time, and maybe have some of the younger guys, the fresher guys, get a little bit more time. You know, if we're kind of going through a stretch, I would like to see guys like obviously Shai Gilgeous-Alexander getting a lot more than garbage minutes. I think that regardless of how the stretch pans out, you know, to see him playing less than 10 or 12 minutes a game, to me, will kind of be a huge disappointment. And like you said, you know, we have some injury prone guys. Avery Bradley, 6 games last season, he struggled a lot. But, you know, we have him on a 2-year deal. So I think that you know, this is definitely going to determine what we do going forward. If we end up trading him, I could also see if we go on a hard stretch, you know, we're going to start looking to what the team is going to look like midseason. You know, we have some really extremely team-friendly contracts, most notably Lou Williams, you know, and if we're not doing too well, or it's not looking like a playoff push, you know, do we maybe trade for some assets? Or if, you know, we end up going 500 over this stretch of 14 games, do we think maybe we go all in, you know, we try to trade for some other pieces. So yeah, I'd really like to see how Doc runs this all together and really how it adjusts the rest of our season moving forward. You know, we're in a rebuild, and it's definite both from our roster as well as the reaction to the team. Also notable, this is the lowest amount of nationally televised games that we've had since, I think, 2009, around that time. There's only three this season, and the first of which will be against the Spurs at the end of that, as the last game of that particularly difficult 14-game stretch. So I think I see it as a little bit of a battle for relevancy, and to remain, you know, obviously Los Angeles's favorite basketball team. So I think that's going to be a little difficult.
Well, I'm sure most Clippers fans would have the date January 12th circled in their calendar. It is, of course, the day when Blake Griffin does return back in a Pistons uniform, assuming he's healthy, which, of course, William, as you would well know, is not something that we should be taking for granted, because during the January-December stretch of most seasons, Griffin has almost more often than not been in a suit rather than in uniform. But assuming he is healthy by January the 12th, Griffin and his Detroit Pistons will head back to the Staples Center. It's an afternoon game, a 12:30 tip-off there in LA. How do you think the fans will greet Griffin's return? Do you think there'll be anything but positivity?
No, I really don't see him getting anything but a warm welcome back. You know, a lot of people are huge fans. Obviously, he's responsible for bringing this franchise back into relevancy. And you know, I think from most fan perspectives, there's no ill will there. You know, we were very, very lucky to be able to re-sign him. We kind of promised him the world. I think that there were some high expectations that he might have had to the franchise. And, you know, it didn't end up working out that he's, you know, still in a Clippers uniform. But when we traded him, we were able to get an enormous amount of pieces that are I think, going to be so integral for at least the next couple of seasons.
In terms of, yeah, the fans, and I agree with you, I think it's going to be 98% positive, if not 100% positive in terms of the reception. But what will the organization do? We've heard those stories about during those free agency pitches about them, you know, hanging his jersey up in the rafters and, you know, mocking up all that sort of stuff as, you know, one of the great, you know, players or people in history, basically, with some of the stuff that they were putting out. What will the organization be doing in terms of rolling out that treatment for Griffin? Will it be something over the top? How do you think, or they're going to go understudy? How do you think they got to approach that?
I don't know. It's really hard to call, but I just, you hear some of, I mean, and I wasn't there, but you hear some of the claims that there was like pictures of him compared to like Martin Luther King and stuff like that. So I don't really know what to expect. I'm hoping it's just kind of a nice video tribute, you know, maybe some highlights from his draft through his seasons here. I hope they don't end up going too insane with it. But you never know. I mean, maybe Steve Ballmer will get a t-shirt gun in the shape of his face and everyone will get a free t-shirt with Blake Griffin on it.
That would be, I wanted to bring it back, the hot dog gun. The Steve Ballmer hot dog gun is definitely one of the greatest fan engagement, efforts we have seen in recent times.
Absolutely.
From the Clippers. But that is definitely a game that is plenty of return engagements all throughout the NBA this season. Of course, Kawhi Leonard and DeMar DeRozan playing against their former teams. But the Griffin one, I think because he was traded last season, goes a little bit under the radar, but we still haven't seen that. So that's going to be huge. And I think it's going to be an overwhelmingly positive situation for Blake and for the Clippers fans. William, it is going to be a tough stretch for the Clippers. Not only do they have to battle the Western Conference, and it was an uphill battle to get into the playoffs, but the way the schedule has panned out is not ideal for them. They are trying to, I don't want to sound too harsh, but, you know, cling on to relevancy, as you mentioned, with that dip in national TV games. They've got exciting talent. They've got some good players, but you know, it's going to be a real, real challenge for Doc and this team. And you're going to be covering all that over on Locked On Clippers. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA and talking about the Blake Griffin return and the difficulties that the Clippers may face in this upcoming season.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Josh. Always a pleasure.
Another team with an interesting NBA schedule that was released, or at least one that was highly anticipated, is the Cleveland Cavaliers. So I'm joined by Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs to discuss the recent information about the Cavs schedule. Of course, we know that they didn't get the Christmas Day game this season. There's a huge reason for that. We know that he now lives in Los Angeles. But of course, Chris, what every Cavs fan wanted to know, and pretty much every NBA fan wanted to know, is when LeBron and the Lakers would be returning to Quicken Loans Arena. We've got the date. It's November 21. What's your feeling on it?
I'm personally happy that it's early in the season. I think it's something that it's good to get it out of the way. I think it's good for the Cavs. I think it's good because they can get this game out of the way. They can not think about it for LeBron. He can just also get it out of the way for him. So I think for both parties, it's good. And me personally, I think it will be one of those games we make too much of. I understand why it'll be a big moment. I think the environment in the arena will be really, really interesting that night. But for the Cavs, it'll be just 6 weeks or so, or 7 weeks or so into this new era. They may not have an identity yet. They'll be figuring a lot of things out. The Lakers will likely be figuring a lot of things out. These are not going to be teams that are fully formed. And we're just going to get a game that is more about the emotion of LeBron coming back than anything else. So to me, that is just all it's really about. But I think it's good that it's just going to be done in November and not, let's say, May or something crazy like that, or April or something like that, rather.
Anyone who was an NBA fan 4 years ago will remember when LeBron came back to Cleveland, not 4 years ago, actually, it was longer than that. When was it now? Eight years ago? Anyway, it was a long time ago when LeBron first came back to Cleveland as a member of the Miami Heat. And it was, Chris, one would say a raucous atmosphere, quite aggressive atmosphere for LeBron to return. But I'm saying this from an outside perspective. I don't imagine that the reception that LeBron's going to get back in Cleveland this time around is going to be anywhere near the same as it was when he returned as a member of the Heat.
No, I actually, when they announced this game, I went back and looked at a YouTube video of that game, and looking back at the booing and everything that sort of around that, it was kind of an ugly scene, and I don't think represents the best of the fandom or really anything that is like a healthy part of fandom. But I think this will be much tamer. I think I think he'll be celebrated. I think you will have some people that do feel some kind of frustration with him leaving again. But I do think he won this city a title. There should be a level of appreciation there. If we're looking at a team that's going to come in to be a villain for the Cavs this year, it's probably the Nuggets, based on what Isaiah Thomas said about the city this week. So I think for LeBron coming back, it'll be awkward a little bit. It'll be weird, and it'll celebrate him, but I think it'll be nothing like it was last time.
What do you think the organization will do for LeBron on his return? There's been a lot of hubbub over recent seasons about video tributes and all this sort of stuff. What will the organization do for LeBron on his return back in November?
I would expect they are going to do some. It has to be a big tribute, right? Like his jersey is going to be retired at some point. It would, to me, seem to be way too soon to do it now. That would be kind of weird. But I think a mega tribute, I think the day being about him, is fair. I think it's deserved. I think you'll have a lot of reunions. I think you'll have a lot of just really positive, happy memories more than anything in the lead up to the game, and then you'll move on. But it will be a spectacle in that sense, because it's the one time he'll be back here. It's not like he went to a team in the East where he'll be back 2-3 times. LeBron will be back one time. They'll play in LA later in the season, but this is one of the two times they'll see him, and it's the one time Cavs fans will really have a chance, I think, to look at him and pay respects to him, and also just the first time he'll be in the environment where that sort of thing is just going to happen. And because any environment he's playing in otherwise, or has been in publicly since the announcement he's going to Lakers, is just not where that's going to be. So that's going to be the first, I think, real public chance for Cavs fans to publicly, sort of as a mass group, sort of cope with it.
You mentioned Isaiah Thomas, and that is an interesting segue here, who had the comments over the weekend saying he can understand why LeBron left again, because Cleveland was a, quote, shithole. obviously Isaiah didn't endear himself to A, his teammates, B, the front office, C, the fan base while he was in Cleveland. Now he's further inflaming that, even though he's issued some sort of retraction. It's clear that he wasn't well liked or didn't enjoy his time in Cleveland. You mentioned that you will see a little bit more vitriol towards Isaiah. How aggressive do you think the fans will be towards him? Because again, there is a lot of finger pointing and blame that went Isaiah Thomas's way for the some of the early failures of last season.
Yeah, I think to be fair to Isaiah, he did say in a video that he did kind of said he shouldn't have said that. He said he was talking about the situation more than the city, and I get that. I actually do kind of believe him. I know it's sort of there's some reason to look at it and be kind of annoyed with it, but Isaiah really did seem to try to make everything work for him. He did to some extent. Like, he did seem to like enjoy at least some of his time there, but it was tough. It was tough for him to just really acclimate there, and I do think the way things went down with him, there are very few Cavs fans that really look at him in a positive light. There was a lot of negativity, I think, from that fan base coming in. So I don't think it's going to be, you know, quite like LeBron insanity, but I do think it's going to not be great for him. I think when you're looking at guys that are going to get booed, I'm pretty sure he's going to get booed. I'm pretty sure it will be his first game back in Cleveland since he was traded. After, you know, the infamous photo of LeBron jumping past him to celebrate with Jiddy Osmond after he hit that winner against the Timberwolves right just before the deadline, I think that'll be his first game back. So I don't remember exactly when the Nuggets play in Cleveland, but that's going to be a weird move.
It is. Now, anything else interesting in terms of the schedule from the Cavs? Looking at things from a back-to-back perspective, are they being shafted in that regard? Is there anything that really stands out from the schedule? We know that they're going to be playing 41 games on the road and 41 games at home, as every other team does. But how does it break? Is it positive? Is it negative? Is it about neutral?
I generally think it's a good change. I think you got some earlier games, which I'm a fan of. I think we're going to get a good idea, I think, early, too, of sort of where this team falls in the hierarchy. If you look at the beginning of the season, they're going to play in Toronto and then in Minnesota. Then they get the Hawks at home for their home opener. Then they play the Nets at home. They play at Detroit versus Indiana and then play the Hawks again. That's a mix of teams that is playoff teams in the West and one playoff team in the West. A team that should be in Eastern playoffs in the Pacers. You play the Hawks, who are going to be really bad twice. A team in Brooklyn who might be decent enough and will certainly play pretty hard. And you got a team in Toronto that, if you know, assuming Kawhi plays, that, you know, should be very good and has been one of the East best teams. So you start, you know, very, very early with a bunch of good teams, and you go, you know, continue that. You actually get Denver on November 1st. You get, you know, go to Charlotte, go to Orlando. So I think that first chunk of the season for me, you're going to get a good mix of teams that we expect to be bad, expect to be sort of in the middle, and then some of the better teams. So I think early, at least, we're going to get an idea of where the Cavs stand going in. And I just, because right now, I just don't really know fully what to expect from them. And I obviously do not think the beginning of the season dictates everything for them, but I think it's a good place to kind of figure things out of where they're going to be and for us to get an actual gauge of what kind of situation they're heading into.
Well, it is definitely going to be an interesting season in Cleveland, as the organization says they're trying to push still for a playoff spot. We've got dates in November with Denver at the start of November, the big one there with November 21 with LeBron returning. It's going to be very interesting, definitely a different vibe with this Cleveland team for this season, and Chris is going to be covering all of that over on Locked On Cavs this coming season, this preseason, this offseason, all that stuff. So make sure you're checking him out over on Locked On Cavs. Chris, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA and discussing the LeBron return.
Thanks as always.
Lastly, let's go to David Rommel of Locked On Heat. Some interesting news out in the last couple of days about Heat legend Dwayne Wade. There was some speculation, David, that he was going to be potentially heading to China as a big contract offer would be coming there. We know the Wade Chinese shoe deal over there, but he clarified that over the last couple of days, David.
Yeah, absolutely. He was in Orlando celebrating as the global ambassador for the Junior NBA World Championship. And while he was there, he spoke to reporters. I happened to be there in the scrum as he was speaking to us. And he did clarify that he wouldn't be joining any other NBA team. He wouldn't be going to China despite the lucrative offer that had been apparently made. It'd either be playing for Miami or, as he said, living in Miami and just staying at home and not being an active NBA player anymore. So it's the Heat or bust, and it looks like it's very likely that he'll probably return to the team.
because the Heat haven't got, they don't have a full roster at this stage. They've only got, I think, 13 guys on the roster plus the couple of two-way players. So there's still obviously roster spots for Dwayne Wade to come back. What do you think the delay is if, you know, he is indeed coming back? Like, why were we, are we, you know, dragging it into here the middle of August? And we, this is really the first we've heard from Wade in quite a while.
Yeah, you know, I don't think there's anything specifically slowing down the process of signing Wade. I think he's eager to return, and the team is probably very eager to have him back. But more than likely, they were probably trying to make some kind of moves in between here and the draft and, of course, with the start of free agency to kind of see whether or not they might be able to clear some of the logjam in the backcourt, perhaps move a larger piece, say a Hassan Whiteside. And that, of course, would have a trickle-down effect as far as how you shape the rest of the roster. None of those moves played out. We've heard that they were active in making trade calls, but apparently none of the Heat's assets were strong enough to consider pulling off a trade. So at this point, the roster is fairly stuck with how it was last year. There haven't been many changes over the offseason. And where I'm hearing, and I spoke to a couple people around the Orlando area there that were close to Wade, and one of the holdups is that he's apparently angling for the full mid-level exception. I think it's somewhere about $5.3 million. So he could sign the veteran minimum, but he'd want the higher salary. Considering the number of cheaper deals that he's taken over the course of his career with Miami, it seems like that might be a sticking point for him.
Well, he did play last season on the minimum when he signed with Cleveland and obviously traded to Miami last season. He didn't play a huge amount in terms of minutes and 22 minutes per game last season with Miami, but that was, of course, David, was without Deion Waiters, who we assume is going to be back at the start of the season. So it's another player added into that backcourt mix. Where's Wade going to fit in? What are they going to do with his playing time? Is he going to be an every night rotation guy? Is someone else going to be missing out? How are they going to slide him in if he does actually return to this team in what could be a swan song in terms of his career?
Well, we're not quite sure if Waiters is going to be back. I don't think he'll be back for the start of training camp. He seems to think that he will be available. He hasn't really been speaking to media. He's been doing some on-court work, and everything that we've heard is that that might be somewhat delayed. He may not actually be there for the start of the season. So if Waiters is out, that makes things a little simpler. Now, we've also heard some rumors that Miami might be able to finally trade away Tyler Johnson potentially to the Houston Rockets. We're told the rumor is that they might be in the market for a Ryan Anderson type. I'm not sure how likely that will be, but we'll see how that plays out. As far as Waiters is concerned, if he returns and he's at full strength as far as his health and his ankle are concerned, he'll be the starter. And for Wade, he'll come off the bench, probably providing a similar role than he did last year, which is very comparable to what Waiters provides. And I think that was what was missing while Waiters was out due to his ankle injury. There wasn't anybody who was aggressive in creating his own shot, making plays for others. And so their skill sets are actually pretty similar at this point. And I think Wade might be even a little bit more efficient as far as his scoring is. But that seems the most likely scenario, is that he will be an everyday rotation player, as you said, in a limited role backing up Deion Waiters.
It's not like it, and Wade wasn't great last season. I had my concerns of him joining the Heat, just taking the ball out of the hands of some of the other guys who had really, you know, taken their game up another level, especially someone like Josh Richardson. Do you think that, you know, Wade at the age of, you know, 37 is going to be during next season will be still demanding a high usage as he did last season? And will that have any impact on the way the Heat run things as a team for a guy with diminishing skills? We know he's a legend, but the skills aren't at the same level. But could that be detrimental in terms of just on-court play?
I don't know that detrimental is the right word. It'll certainly, it will have a negative impact, not from a chemistry perspective, but from an actual efficiency one. And I think Miami's team does struggle a little bit if Wade's relying on the ball and you know, if he's a high usage player, and that could slow things down. And Richardson, Winslow, and others spoke about being deferential when Wade was back on the team last year. You know, they respect him immensely. He was on the team when they were rookies, both Richardson and Winslow, so they kind of took an automatic back seat and were less effective, less aggressive overall. And so I think they're aware of that now, and maybe some of those butterflies are gone, and they'll be more willing to be a little bit more aggressive, which is what the Heat needs from them both. And so I think, you know, Wade is incapable of changing. He's saying all the right things, as a veteran will want to do. You know, he's open to a newer role. He's open to a diminished role. He says this. But, of course, that was probably most effective for him 2 years ago when he chose to sign in Chicago, and instead he decided to take more money and have an active role that he could no longer fill. And when he came back to Miami last year, he kind of took over the same playmaking role that he's always been used to playing. So I think it's harder for him to accept it, even though he's willing to at least say publicly that he's willing to accept a lesser role. He just can't actually fill that lesser role. So it's up to other players. I think the younger players who are still capable of making a leap, particularly Richardson, I think, for them to say, you know what, it's up to me to shine now. Wade had his moment, and I'll have to be more aggressive now if I want to continue developing as a player.
Wade had a usage of 31% in his 21 games as a member of the Heat last season, which is obviously astronomical, and he had the same sort of level he was putting up in the 2009 to 2012 type range, you know, clearly peak Wade, which is a huge amount considering how inefficient that he was. You mentioned Richardson. Pat Riley had some comments that he wants him to maybe push up to 18 points per game. That seems lofty to me. What can Richardson do to actually improve his offensive game, though?
Well, he's talked about being more effective as a ball handler. That's something that he still struggles with. He's got a herky-jerky motion when it comes to dribbling, and he's not necessarily very effective because he gets stuck in traffic a lot, and he doesn't know quite how to create his own shot. He doesn't have a go-to move necessarily. He's able to finish around the basket with this kind of janky-looking scoop shot that he's perfected somewhat, but that's not exactly the most effective shot either. So he needs a go-to move, so he's working on incorporating those. I think the long-range shooting kind of tailed off a little bit last year, but that's another opportunity for him. If he gets as consistent as he was, let's say, in his rookie year, then that would be a huge leap for him. And I think it's something that, again, you know, with Wade coming back, with Waiters out and him kind of sliding into that small forward position and being asked to do so much defensively, I think it took away some of his aggression on offense. I think with a more balanced roster, especially if Wade and Waiters both return to the lineup, I think Richardson can concentrate on being a little bit more effective and efficient as a shooter. So that's what I'm hoping for. 18 points, I agree, is probably a lofty expectation for him, but I could see that somewhere in the 15 to 16 range.
Well, it's going to be interesting. We all know Dwayne Wade is a legend. We assume he's returning to Miami, but obviously it's going to be interesting to see how he goes in that most likely finale of his career. You can hear David and Wes have all the discussions on Wade when he does finally decide to re-sign over on Locked On Heat. David, thanks for jumping on and chatting on your non-assigned Locked On NBA day.
Absolutely, not a problem.
Thanks, man. That wraps up another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. The schedule's out, few reactions across the league there. Make sure you are following me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net. If you like this podcast, go and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Also, hit subscribe on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Check out your favorite team right across the Locked On Network, whether that's NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball. We're going to be covering all of your favorite teams in no time, so go and check all of those out, guys. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.